Want to welcome everybody to the 2023 gathering. It's hard to believe it's 2023 already, isn't it?
This is the 24th gathering.
This is the 24th?
Yeah.
Our very first one was in the year 2000. Who all was here in the year 2000? Annie was, and Lorraine, and Artie, and that was about it. What happened?
Annie was there too.
Who? Yeah, she's Annie.
That's what I said, Annie.
Oh, yeah. I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Yeah, what happened to all those people that came to that first gathering?
They got old.
It was a good bunch there.
They didn't
some of them
were
good people that we just never saw again after a few years. You know, it's hard to keep an audience interested for a long period of time over something as magical as the molecular relationship. When the molecular relationship hasn't completely happened yet. So it takes kind of an inner witness. But, you know, when I started teaching people and then I presented the idea of the molecular relationship to the group, there was two things that interested the group more than anything else. One was soul contact and the other was the molecular relationship. People loved that, but then they wanted it to happen yesterday. So over a period of time, a lot of people just came and went. They were interested in it. They liked the idea. They liked the concept. But because it didn't happen in 6 months or a year, they dropped off, and then new people come on. But the people we have here right now are really solid. Most of you have been with us for, I think all of you have been with us for quite some time. And we often start out with introductions. Artie's going to take care of that tomorrow. But everybody here pretty much knows each other. We haven't been advertising the gatherings lately for the masses like we used to, but just inviting people that's in the molecular group. Because we want to reach as high a state as possible. So we want to be in contact with the spirit. And if there's one person in a group that is negative, then that just brings down the whole thing. And so we're glad that everybody here is positive and has good feelings toward other people in the group. And that's really important. So because of the good atmosphere that we have the possibility of getting a fairly high vibration in this this gathering. We look forward to that happening. So in the first part of this meeting, we're going to talk a little bit about the molecular relationship, and then the second part, we're going to begin, we're going to divide the idea into the four nights. We got four nights here, and the first night will be dedicated to earth, second to water, the third to air, and the fourth to fire. And the hope is that by the time we reach fire, that people in the group will feel some of the effect of the spiritual fire. So that's the goal for the meeting as a whole, to progress from earth to water to air to fire. And there's nothing better than that the spiritual fire that you feel when you're connected to the what you might call just the universal life, which is we call God. And when this connection is made, then you become one with other lives. And the closest we've come to that was with the three ladies here that we were just talking on a Zoom meeting, and I quoted the scripture where Christ was saying that watch and be ready, for you know not what hour that the master will come. And when I quoted that scripture, all of a sudden the master did come. And it was a great experience. And the best part of it was that other people were become aware of what this could feel like and get a witness of the molecular relationship and a foreshadowing of it. And even this wasn't the fullness, but it was enough to give these ladies a witness of it. I'd like them to just recount really briefly what you felt when this happened. She's the closest one.
I am.
You want to tell us about what it felt like for you?
Well, it was just a really powerful, peaceful feeling. It was something that I'd never really experienced that strong before. A lot of joy and emotion, and just so much peace is how I would describe it, I think, for me. And a lot of, it felt very still. I don't, stillness to it, I don't know how to describe that exactly either.
And
but
Adam was telling me even a day or two afterwards.
Yeah, I just think I felt, yeah, something for a couple of days. It was just a really nice feeling. Annie's turn.
Okay, I'm Annie. It was kind of the same thing. I mean, it was really overwhelming. It was like, I couldn't hold back my tears, even if I tried. I mean, they were just streaming, and I was not sad, I was happy. And the peace, the stillness, it's like, I have explained it before, like a blanket of quietness or stillness coming down on over you, and it's just like, for the next couple of days, I had this feeling like, I don't care what happens. It doesn't matter what happens because everything is okay. It was the most amazing feeling. I want to have that one again. But just knowing that I had it helps a lot. I mean, I have faith that I can do it again one day and that other people can do it too, of course. So it was really a great experience for me.
Well, you two ladies summed it up. I got little to say, but I guess on a physical level, I just felt inflated, like something was just like blowing me up, like a parachute about to go off. And so I had that sensation on a physical level, my head and my heart space. And I just also remember being like supercharged. It was like this, as if like an electric current just went into me. That's what it felt like. And there was a sensation of joy and but power too. That's what I felt.
And did you also feel like you weren't feeling it alone?
I felt like I was not the only one in the room. That's what it felt like. Something massive came in the room.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, ladies. Well, we're glad to have all three of the ladies that had the experience here together. But I'm glad after all this time that three people together at the one time had a witness like that. Now, Curtis and I had several occasions where we felt the presence together, like one of the times that it happened was when we went and visited the headquarters of the Mormon Church. Curtis and I both got excommunicated, and my wife was really upset that I was excommunicated. My first wife, not Artie. But and after I was excommunicated, all the members came to my wife and said, oh, we'll love him back in the church. But, you know, they were all afraid to even talk to me, so we never saw anybody attempt to love me back in the church. My wife kind of thought that I was going to be like Paul and have a big conversion happen and bring me back into the church. So she wrote a letter to the prophet himself, and the prophet himself was out of commission, which ties into experience of me and Curtis attempting to visit the prophet, and he refused to see us. Shortly after, right after that, he was struck with some type of brain problem, and he was dysfunctional for the rest of his life. So anyway, when my wife wrote a letter to the prophet, he was out of commission, so it went to Marky Peterson. And Marky Peterson, Bruce R. McConkie were basically leading the church at that time. And she got a letter back saying, we'd be happy to talk to your husband. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. You know, Curtis and I tried to get an audience with the authorities and were unsuccessful, but my wife, in pleading for the salvation of her husband, was successful. So I told Curtis about it. He says, can I come with you? I said, well, you can try. They're just supposed to just accept me, but if they'll let you in, we'll see what happens. So anyway, he come along, and they let us both in. Peterson was behind a giant desk. He had a huge desk. And McConkie was sitting at looked like one of those old school desks, and he had a bunch of yellow pads that he was ready to write on. We sat down next to him, and I sat down next to facing Peterson there, and he says, which one of you is Joe Dewey? I says, that'd be me. He says, did you write this thing? And I looked on his desk, and he had everything I'd ever written about the church on there. I was amazed how that they were paying that much attention to what we were doing. The one he was referring to was a story called Journey's End. It was a story about Curtis's excommunication, and the first half was pretty much all true. And then the second half was fiction that told what would happen if there was a collapse of the economy, that everybody would be hunting for the down the Mormons because they had all the food. And one of the main characters, his wife, was killed his kids, and they crucified his wife on the side of his house. I made it really graphic because I wanted it to really sink into the Mormons that, you know, just having a year's supply is not going to save them if there's a big collapse of society. Peterson, he says, did you write this? I said, yes. He says, this is, and he was trying to think of some way to describe it because you could tell his mind was thinking this was the worst thing he'd ever read. He says, this belongs in Playboy. Playboy was the most evil thing that he could come up with at the spur of the moment, which I thought was kind of funny at the time. And I said, yeah, I wrote it all right. And so we started explaining how the church was not prepared for a collapse, how that story was to illustrate the danger the church was in. But what's funny is that after this time, the church did start doing some preparation, and they have got some gathering places prepared if there is a collapse now. But what I think is kind of funny now, if there was a collapse, it'd be funny if the church was prepared and I'm not. when Curtis and I were the ones that warned them about the whole thing and maybe got them thinking about it, at least. But anyway, Curtis, why don't you go through some of the details of that dialogue we had?